Latter-day Saint Home Educators is pleased to bring you this audio presentation, recorded live during the 2017 Youth Education Conference, held in Logan, Utah.
This is Kathy Mellore and the importance of having heroes. For those of us in our recorded audience, we welcome you as well. It's good to be with you. And I am excited to talk to you about a subject that really can improve our lives and our perspective of our lives and the things we can learn from our life. And I want to start by asking if anybody feels ordinary, like they're just ordinary. Yeah, a couple of you. Okay.
Sometimes.
All right. Well, that's okay. I think it's normal. Welcome to normal. And I'm just going to tell you briefly a little tiny itty bitty story. Has anybody read the book The Dream Giver?
No.
Okay. So have you? So at the end of my little handout in your book, there's a thing that says, if you read all of these books, The Dream Giver is one of them, email me and I will send you a prize worthy of a hero. So I'm going to encourage you to read those books and return a report that you've done so. It'll be a life-changing journey for you if you choose to do that. Anyway, this book, The Dream Giver, there's a character and his name is Ordinary. And he's living kind of an ordinary life. And one day he wakes up and there's this feather. This feather has appeared. And
the
feather is the sign that he has something in his life to do, that he has a call, he has a mission. And we are going to talk today about heroes, about the importance of having them, how to find them, and how to emulate them. There's more in your handout that will, like, there's kind of like exercises that you can do to, you know, take what I'm sharing with you today and have an experience with not hero worship, but hero emulation. Okay, that's kind of one of those big words where we emulate. We try to be like our heroes. Do you guys already have heroes? Like, do you have any? Does anybody have somebody that they really admire? You want to shout them out? Who are some of your heroes?
Joan of Arc.
Joan of Arc, cool.
Tesla.
Tesla?
Yeah, that's a...
It's got to be a...
Mom?
He gets an adventure.
Okay. So your mother. Oh, I love that. Your grandpa, nice, yeah. Your great grandpa, is he still alive? Wow, that's fabulous. Okay, your brother Robert. Okay, it's great to have people that we can look up to and have the experience of having a hero. There's a lot of different things about heroes that can help us, and we're going to talk about that and talk about how a hero's journey is something that we can live every day of our lives and continue, you know, like keep on going on hero's journeys. But how do you recognize a hero? How do you know when somebody is worthy of emulation? I think sometimes it's natural. I'm hearing a lot of family members, and those family members tend to be people that we can, you know, we know them intimately, and so it's easy to look up to them. I do a lot of public speaking seminars, and one of the speeches that I oftentimes assign to the youth is to talk about a person that they admire, and there's always a couple who pick their mom or their dad, and I'm going to just tell you that most of the time they end up crying in their speech. So there's a little inside scoop for you. So we're going to talk about some of the elements of a hero and what a hero is. So I don't know if you've ever heard of this. The hero cycle is a pretty famous concept that was developed by Joseph Campbell in a book called A Hero of a Thousand Faces, in which he postulates and kind of proves that every culture, in every language, in every, you know, part of the world and time in history, there have been hero stories, and the hero stories are all kind of the same. They follow the same pattern, okay? So this pattern here up on the screen is the hero's journey or the hero's cycle, and it starts up here with a call, okay? So Ordinary got his got his feather, and that was his dream. That was the thing that he'd always wanted to do, and he'd kind of forgotten about, right? So the call is when you feel like, yeah, this is this thing I'm going to do. You know, it's going to be really hard, but it matters to me. And you think about somebody like, oh, I don't know, Bilbo Baggins. He's sitting comfortably in his own little world, eating his second breakfast, and then he gets the call, right? And after the hero gets the call, there's resistance. There's something that he or she has to overcome to go on the hero cycle journey. And so there's this automatic, like, whoa. In the book The Dreamweaver, they call them border bullies. Okay, the people who say, you can never do that. Oh, that's never been done, and you can't do that. You're too young. You're too this. You're too that. You're not enough of this or whatever. Like they're discouraging you from doing the really, really hard thing. And then the mentor comes, and the mentor gives the hero a piece of information, or maybe a sword, or maybe a tool that's going to make their journey successful, right? I hope you guys have mentors in your life, because a mentor is part of the hero cycle, and if we want to be heroes and learn from them, we need to have mentors. So then we get into this part right here: test, trials, traps, and the desert. Okay, does any of that sound like fun? No.
Yes.
Okay, you like trials. Excellent. Well, let me just briefly tell you that tests are things that happen external to you. Okay? So all of a sudden there's this thing you have to do in order to go on your hero's journey, and it's outside of you, and there's nothing to do but get over that test. A trial is something that you're going to have to endure. You're not going to get over it. It's just going to happen. Okay. And then the traps are the things that are a result of our own weaknesses. You know, everybody's got weaknesses, right? And the hero, you guys read Percy Jackson. What's his weakness?
Land.
Oh, land. Okay. Okay, what's his character weakness?
He's too loyal.
Too loyal, yeah. And it gets him into some scrapes, right? So those are his traps, because of his too loyal personality, he sets himself up for some difficulties. Anyway, in the desert, like, you can kind of think of Simba, you know, going through the desert across, you know, to find Hakuna Matata. Right? There's always part of the journey that is just long and treacherous and keeps going and going, okay? But then there's the final sprint, and the reward is fulfilling the mission, getting the call, you know, getting the adventure, you know, whatever's at the end of the adventure, and maybe getting the girl as well. So that's the hero's journey, and we can live this in our lives, okay? We can live the hero's journey in our life. And think of it as a cycle. Like it's not just once that you do this. Anytime you have a call, and that might be a prompting, right? Sometimes the calls come from the Lord. It might be a prompting, and we get a choice, right, to follow through on it or not. So I'm going to show you the other alternative to being a hero. The other alternative is that we hit the resistance, and we go, I want a new call. Or I want a new prompting. Or I want a new adventure. This one's too hard. I didn't know it was going to be this hard. And so we could call this other alternative mediocrity. We don't want to be there. So the hero's journey is an element that I found useful in my own life, because I want to live a story that I'm the hero, you know, that I'm the protagonist in my own story. So we're going to talk about some elements of finding heroes and what to look for. These are also in your handout, but I want to specifically say that I want to focus, I guess I should say, on the fact that our heroes need to be the ones who finish, who don't give up, right? There's a lot of really famous stories that I'm not going to tell about people who didn't give up. Thomas Edison, Abraham Lincoln, you know what I'm talking about? Like, you've heard these stories, right? These people who endure, like, challenge and defeat after defeat, and they just don't give up on their dream. We want to have heroes that do that sort of thing. And what we don't want, for sure, is people who break rules, laws, or commandments to get what they want. Because that isn't being a hero.
That's a villain.
Yeah, exactly. And sometimes villains are, you know, you start out thinking that they're heroes. So good. Thank you. So once you've found a hero, you know, somebody that you want to emulate, somebody who has lived a hero's journey, what do you do? I think you ask yourself these three questions. You look at how they live their life, how they face challenges, and you ask yourself, what do I need? What do I need to know? What do I need to know that they know? If they're still alive, you can ask them. That's always handy. But if your hero is somebody from history, you know, you have to kind of dig a little deeper. How do I need to feel? Maybe I feel unsure of myself, right? Maybe I don't feel like a hero. How can I feel like a hero? So you ask yourself these questions because you can mentor yourself. You know, outside mentors are fabulous. I highly recommend them. But you can also mentor yourself by asking questions. You can even ask these kinds of questions and prayerfully consider the answers and get guidance from your ultimate mentor. So these are ways in which we find, you know, more readily what's already inside of us, the genius that's already inside of you, the hero that's already inside of you. How do I need to feel to be like that person? And also, just as importantly, is what do I need to do? It might be something mundane like study or learn a skill or find a way to overcome a weakness. So we can gain from heroes by filling ourselves with stories. The story I wanted to share with you is a man named James Stockdale. So have you guys heard of the Vietnam War? Okay, it was about 50 years ago, long time, right? And it was a pretty horrendous war. I mean, all wars are horrendous. But this one was particularly horrendous because, in my opinion, because the United States didn't really know what we were doing, like didn't really have a clear objective. Anyway, one of the things that happened there was a lot of Americans were taken prisoner of war. And one of them was a man named James Stockdale, and he was in what was called the Hanoi Hilton. And it was called that like it wasn't a Hilton hotel. It was actually quite horrendous. And he had a very interesting perspective. He survived. Many, many people did not survive. And he had a very interesting perspective. He said that the optimist, you know, when people would say, well, who didn't make it? He would say the optimists. And that like sort of goes against everything you've ever heard, right? We're supposed to think positively and always be optimistic. And from his experience there, he said, yeah, the optimists would say, oh, we'll be out by Christmas. We'll be home by Christmas. And then Christmas would come and they wouldn't be home. They'd still be in this horrendous place being tortured. And then they'd say, oh, well, by Easter, for sure we'll be home by Easter. And then Easter would come and their optimism did not pay off. And so he said that they actually like kind of gave up because their optimism didn't come to pass. So he developed what has become known as the Stockdale Principle. And the Stockdale Principle is that you face the current realities in your life. You know, you don't sugarcoat what is really going on. So here he is in this place being tortured, being starved, you know, being abused in a wide variety of ways. Mentally, emotionally, and spiritually, and he says you have to accept that those realities are part of your existence, and at the same time, remaining idealistic, knowing that good can come out of it eventually, but it's that ability to look at the harsh realities in your life. I don't know if you ever feel like you have a goal, you have something you want to accomplish. You want your life to be different, but there are things that you can't change, that you don't have any control over. And having the lessons from James Stockdale is that we can recognize that those things are and still be idealistic. And it's okay to remain idealistic. Sometimes the world is kind of cynical, and the stories that you want to fill yourself with are maybe seem too perfect or too whatever, right? And so we want to be able to face our realities, but at the same time, to be able to remain idealistic. So the other thing about becoming a hero is that we have to have a plan. So I like outline some exercises in your handout that I hope you'll take the time to do, because identifying the hero is one thing, understanding the cycle of a hero and wanting to live it. I mean, that was something that I didn't figure out until late in life, that I wanted to be a hero. You know, I wanted to live a life worthy of a hero. And in order to do that, I had to learn the hero cycle and be able to name it, because the mediocrity cycle isn't a lot of fun. It isn't a lot of fun to give up and feel like a failure, right? So those are having a plan. And like I said, there's exercises in there for you that can help you, having a plan to be able to become like your hero, to become like your many heroes even, is a valuable thing. So the other thing that you're going to learn from your hero is the importance of getting up after a fall. I talked about Abraham Lincoln. I talked about Thomas Edison and their kind of famous failures. But I want to talk about a president of the United States. Hopefully you've heard of him. His name is Teddy Roosevelt. Teddy Bear is named after him, right? He had a tremendous, in fact, I highly recommend you learn more about him. He had a tremendous personality, a tremendous drive, drive to be successful, a drive to make a difference. And he was president, and, well, first of all, he became president when he was vice president and the president died. Okay, so that's kind of an unusual way to become president. And then he was elected president. And he said on the election night, I will not run for a second term, because he'd already kind of done 3 years of a first term. And now this would be like his second term. And he did that in the moment without thinking it through and regretted it the rest of his life. Okay. So after his handpicked guy succeeded him, and he wasn't happy with him being president, the way he was president, he decided to run again. Okay, nobody does this. I mean, it just doesn't happen. You know, that you're president, and then you're not president, and then you run for president again. Very unusual. So he decided to run for president again. And he was preparing to give a speech, and he was shot. This picture is a picture of his speech. It was folded, and those are the bullet holes of the bullet going through his speech. It went into his rib cage and stayed there the rest of his life. It was like an inch or two from his heart, okay? So that's like this creepy kind of, wow, the world is crazy, and it's hard to be a super famous person story. But here's the deal. Here's the reason why I just think this is such an amazing story. He gave the speech. He gave the speech. He opened up his coat and he said to the audience, I hope you'll forgive me for speaking quietly, but I've been shot. You know, he's blood, right? I mean, the man's been shot. And then he goes and he gives a speech. Would you have done that? I would have been like... I'm going to the hospital now, okay? And I don't know. I think it's a pretty impressive determination to get up after you fall. And this is something that a hero does. A hero doesn't just give up when they meet adversity, even if it's a bullet, I guess. Anyway, never heard anything like it before. So we want to do that as well. And now I'm going to focus on elements of a story. Okay, we've talked about the hero cycle, which is part of a story, but we're going to talk about elements of a story that we can implement in our own life and actually change our lives if we think about ourselves as the hero in our story, if we think about ourselves as somebody who wants to live a good story, right? I hope you guys want to live a good story. I hope you're not going to settle for mediocrity. Okay, So the first thing that a hero does that isn't often talked about is they do something really nice. Okay, they endear themselves to their audience, and you can see this in movies and things like this. It's called Rescue the Cat. So I have this very brave firefighter up here rescuing a cat. But when we do things that are nice, okay, when we open a door for somebody, when we help somebody carry their things, you know, those little simple things in life. I mean, you don't have to actually get on a roof and rescue a cat. The principle is that we can act in a way that is, let's call it servant leadership, like Stephen Covey calls it. We can be a servant leader. We can lead and also be kind to people and do things, because in a story, that's what endears us to the protagonist before he or she gets their call and does their amazing thing, is that they've done something nice. So that's the first element. Now this one, I don't know, this one hit me really hard. When I was studying about what makes a great story, I thought about this a lot, okay? So in stories, there's a moment when the hero walks through a door, okay? It's not always a door, but it's kind of the principle of a door, that you're leaving this world, right? This world, this comfortable world. The hero always starts out very comfortable, like in their comfort zone, right? But they have to step out of their comfort zone through the door, and there's no turning back, okay? So when back to Bilbo Baggins, he was in his comfortable little hobbit hole, and when he went on the adventure, right, he didn't have the choice of ever going back, did he? It was always like, you know, I mean, it was a thing now. I am no longer there. And then when he goes back home, he is pretty unsatisfied. He used to be satisfied with a second breakfast, but he's lived a hero's journey. And so going back to that old world is not very easy. Now, one thing about this, it happens in stories. I want you to watch for it now that you know that there's this thing. But we can choose the doors that we step through. We can say, I'm scared to death, but I want to go to college and step through the door and do that thing, whatever it takes to get there. Or I'm scared to death, but I want to start a business and step through that door and create in our own lives the inciting actions. I mean, it could be many, many things. Something that makes you take the adventure. Signing up for a, you know, marathon or whatever, you know, sporting event that you think you could never, never accomplish, but you do, that kind of a thing. So the inciting action is a powerful part of a story. Now, I have in my pocket a very old relic. Okay, so I know a lot of you are kind of sitting far away, but this is a little ticket, and I'm going to tell you a story about this ticket. Okay, so one day I went to get gas, and I walk in, I had to go inside to pay. I walk in, and they're doing this drawing where if your ticket gets pulled, you get a free tank of gas. Now, I know that's not like, you know, the Nobel Prize or anything. But I do drive an SUV, and it's got a pretty big tank. And, you know, I live in California where gas prices are about double what they are here. Well, not quite, but might as well be. So I thought, I'm going to enter this drawing. And so I put my half that you throw in there, you know, and I put this in my purse. And I drive away. I'm a busy, busy mother of many and involved in a lot of activities, and I never went back to find out if I'd won. And I know you're asking, why do I carry this around with me? I mean, it's in my purse all the time. You're asking yourself that, aren't you? Yeah, I thought so. It's because it says, keep this coupon. That's what it says right on it, keep this coupon. Okay, so I just told you a story, and it was a stupid story. It's a really stupid story. What's wrong with that story? I didn't go back to see if I even won. Maybe I won, maybe I didn't, right? What else is really, really stupid about that story? You can't even articulate it. You're like, why did she tell that story? Gas prices are ridiculous. Okay. Well, let me tell you some of the reasons why that story is really stupid. A story is compelling when the character wants something. I wanted the tank of gas. I'm the character, okay? I wanted the tank of gas. All right? So the character wants something and overcomes obstacles to get it. Okay, that's what makes a story compelling. Did I overcome any obstacles?
No.
Did I make any effort whatsoever to even find out? I don't even think I went back to that gas station for 6 months. Okay? I did nothing to achieve the objective of the free tank of gas. Okay? So, another thing that's wrong with that story is that there was no denouement. Okay? So, we're going to learn a French word. Denouement. You have to say it like that and kind of flick your nose up because it's French, you know, denouement. You got it? Denouement. And what it means is that the story comes together. Like all the elements kind of resolve. And then we can live happily ever after. Okay? Now, my story had no obstacles to overcome. My story had no denouement. I mean, it was a meaningless experience, and it just makes me laugh that it says keep this coupon, and I've had it for like 10 years. So, you know, I mean, it's all about my entertainment, right? So what kind of a story do we want to live? What kind of a happily ever after one and a hero ever after, right? Because we want to be the kind of people that want, you know, great things to happen. We want to impact the world. We want to do things that really matter. And in order to do that, we have to have these elements in our lives. Like some of you may enjoy writing stories. I bet you there's at least one person in here who wants to be. Oh, I knew it. There always is. We got a couple. That's fantastic. You like it too? That's so great. I mean, I think that's fantastic. And writing a story, like knowing these elements when you're writing a story, will make a better story. Actually, can I tell you one more element since I've got like four or five people in here who like to write stories? What makes a story go from a great story to an amazing, can't even, get over it kind of story is that somebody pays the ultimate price. That the hero, usually the hero, you know, dies in the quest of being able to, you know, achieve that thing. If you've never read any Dickens, I encourage you to raise your level of reading and do some Dickens. There's this powerful story that he wrote called A Tale of Two Cities. And in A Tale of Two Cities, the hero is so, you don't recognize him at all till the end. Like you just don't even get, you think, who is this dude? He's like drunk. He's like, loves the girl and doesn't get her. I mean, there's all these things about him that you go, at the end, you go, wait a minute. What? And in the story, he pays the ultimate price. He's actually a savior archetype. He does what somebody couldn't do for himself. And I'm not saying, like, go and do that, because obviously that, don't go dying on account of one speech you heard at a conference, certainly. But if you write stories, that's what makes them like really, really compelling.
And a bit sad.
And sad. Oh my goodness. Do I know how to cry at the end of a good story? Yeah, I'm pretty much one of those sobbers. But Happily Ever After is an example of a denouement. And we can use that element in our life as well, resolving, making things, you know, seeing things through, making sure we get to the end of the story before we get there. So I'm going to share this quote with you because I think it's super powerful. If I want you to live a good story, this quote just really teaches the power of it. And it's from a book called A Million Miles in a Thousand Years. And Donald Miller wrote that book. And he says, and once you live a good story, you get a taste for a kind of meaning. Okay, so once you live a good story, you get a taste for a kind of meaning in life, and you can't go back to being normal. You remember Bilbo Baggins couldn't go back to his hobbit hole and be satisfied because he'd changed. He'd had this experience. He'd gone through all kinds of danger and all kinds of, you know, adventure and experiences that were so outside of what was comfortable for him. And then he's done. They've finished. And he goes home, and he's just not the same little hobbit, right? And then he comes up again in Lord of the Rings. So you can't go back to being normal. You can't go back to meaningless scenes stitched together by the forgettable thread of wasted time. Okay, so one thing about being a homeschooler and somebody who I specialize in youth. I love mentoring youth your age, and I've mentored just hundreds of people. And I know that you have more time to fill than you can fathom at this age, at this point. You think you're busy, you know what I mean? But you really have a lot of time. And I hope you're choosing not to waste it, because if you believe, and I hope you do, that you're here on the earth for a purpose, I call that a mission. Some people call it a purpose or a unique personal significance is what Stephen Covey calls it. But I really believe that we're each here for a purpose, and that the Lord wants us to accomplish certain things in our lives. Nobody makes us do that, right? Does anybody make you do great things? I mean, they might make you clean the bathroom or brush your teeth. I mean, that's a possibility. But nobody can make you be a hero. Am I right? I mean, is that
except
fair?
For you.
Except for you, exactly. And we choose our lives. We choose whether we're going to spend them, you know, video gaming or constantly scrolling, you know, Instagram, or whatever our time suckers are, instead of preparing ourselves for that purpose. And here's the thing. The world suffers if you don't fulfill your purpose. The world suffers if you don't have the preparation and the ability to finish out your mission, right? To finish out the purpose that you're here on the earth. And even if you don't know what that is, and I'm guessing that most of you don't, I mean, I didn't know mine until I was in my 40s, so, you know, you have time. But what you don't have time is to waste, because you should be preparing yourself and trying to make your life worthy of that call, worthy of that mission, and doing little mini hero cycles. I really do believe that they happen again and again, that we can see them through, you know, one a year, two a year, and just keep that hero muscle going. So there was a leader in Great Britain during World War II. You might have heard of Winston Churchill. Some of you know Winston Churchill. Okay. So he said a quote that you just can't disagree with this if you believe that you were put on the earth for a purpose. He said, to every man there comes a moment when he is figuratively tapped on the shoulder and offered the chance to do a very special thing, unique to him and fitted to his talents. What a tragedy if that moment comes and finds him unprepared or unqualified for what would have been his finest hour. I'm going to let that sit with you for a second. Everybody's hero journey looks different. Everybody's mission is unique to them. But do you want to reach that moment and find that you had squandered your time, your talents, that you had just sort of forgotten to getting around to getting a great education, that you'd sort of forgotten that living the commandments would bless your life and prepare you spiritually? I don't want to do that. I don't want to be that person. I don't want to live a story that is beneath my privileges. And I'm going to challenge you to, if you already have heroes, look at them more closely. Find ways in which you might become more like them. Emulate. That means to not imitate, but try to be like, try to take on the characteristics of those heroes. If you don't have heroes yet, start a collection, okay? My kids do a class called Hero Project, and in that they create a collection of heroes, everything from people that they know to people in history to famous people who are alive now. And they create this collection because a hero can strengthen us in our moments when we're in those test trials and traps, when we're trudging across the desert, when we're trying to find meaning in our life. And I'd like to end with one more story. I imagine a lot of you have heard of this man. His name is Aaron Ralston, and he was hiking one day in southern Utah and had a boulder shift and trap his arm. He tried everything he could to get it out. He spent a couple days actually stuck with his arm in this boulder, between the boulder and the wall of the canyon or crevice or whatever. And he was giving up. He was kind of like dehydrating and starving to death, and his arm is stuck. And he thought about his daughter. He had a little 2-year-old, I think. And he gets out a piece of rope and he puts a tourniquet on his arm. And he gets out his pocket knife, which he described as like your basic cheap pocket knife. And he cuts his arm off. And he staggers out of this canyon, gets help, survives. And even if nothing but his living to raise his daughter, even if he accomplishes nothing else, was the sacrifice worth it? If he can cut off his arm to serve his family, can I maybe give up an addiction? Can I maybe give up, you know, a pastime that doesn't make me a better person? Can I maybe give up a sin or a weakness? I think I could. I think we can try a little bit harder. I thank you for the opportunity to be with you, and I hope you have an amazing day. Thanks.
Latter-day Saint Home Educators is a nonprofit, all-volunteer organization dedicated to providing inspiration to homeschool families. We hope you enjoyed this recording. If you are interested in listening to more recordings or would like to participate in a future conference, please visit our website at ldshe.org.